The first 13 Israeli hostages who are part of a ceasefire agreement is expected in about 2 hours. There are no reports of fighting since the pause went into effect 7 hours ago. Reporter Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem.
As the ceasefire took hold, Israel allowed 2 large tankers of fuel and 2 of cooking gas into Gaza. In Israel, the entire country was eagerly awaiting the release of the first group of 13 hostages, all women and children, that Hamas has agreed to free. Public health official Dr. Chai Levine says some of the hostages had prior health conditions.
We don't know. We need to be prepared to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
The hostages will be taken to hospitals where they will reunite with their families. Linda Gradstein, CBS News, Jerusalem.
39 Palestinian prisoners are also expected to be released. CBS News correspondent Imtiaz Tayyab from East Jerusalem.
The plight of prisoners is a deeply emotive issue for Palestinians. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, at least 4 in 10 Palestinian men will spend at least some of their life in Israeli jails.
Police blame far-right agitators for riots in Dublin. CBS's Elaine Cobb has more on the violence.
Stores were looted and public buses, a tram and police vehicles were set alight as spontaneous protests erupted after 3 small children and a carer were injured in a knife attack in Dublin city centre. Police Commissioner Drew Harris condemned last night's violence.
We have a complete lunatic hooligan faction driven by far-right ideology.
The knife attacker, a man in his 50s, was hospitalized with what police believe were self-inflicted wounds. Elaine Cobb, CBS News.
Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius was just granted parole after almost 10 years in a South African prison for killing his girlfriend. An unidentified woman has filed a multi-million-dollar civil lawsuit against New York City Mayor Eric Adams, alleging a sexual assault 30 years ago. He denies the allegation.
The accusation absolutely did not happen. I don't even recall who this person is. I've never recalled even meeting them. And, you know, I spent my life protecting people.
It is Black Friday, not as big a day for shopping sprees as it used to be, but still significant for retailers. Retail analyst Bert Flickinger.
Black Friday should exceed about 10 billion. Small Business Saturday the following day will be about the same, but Cyber Monday will be the biggest day of them all, with sales exceeding $12 to $13 billion at retail.
The markets are open for a half day of trading right now. U.S. stock futures are mixed. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
What if your life story was a new podcast series? Would it be a comedy? An action-packed thrill ride? No matter what genre, State Farm is there for your what-ifs, which means they help keep your life story from becoming a mystery. Because when you've got questions like, what if my policy doesn't cover this? They've got answers. You can file a claim on the State Farm mobile app or simply call your agent. It's how insurance plays a supporting role, no matter your story. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hello, and welcome to a special marathon edition of The Kitchen's Open. This is our show within a show that normally happens every Monday during the first segment of the 9 o'clock hour. We have several special episodes we wanted to share with you today during this Thanksgiving week holiday. This first segment is from the week of Thanksgiving last year, when Beth and I give you a plethora of ideas on what to do with your leftovers from yesterday. Of course, all of us here at WFHR hope you had or are having a wonderful Thanksgiving Day feast with all of your loved ones. But more than likely, you're going to have some leftovers. Beth and I share tips on the best ways to reheat things so they taste almost as good as they were when they were fresh. Next, we'll get into ideas on what to do with individual leftovers. Once you're sick of eating the same thing a few times, perhaps you want to change things up and make something different. We both share recipes from our mom and grandma's kitchens and what they did with turkey leftovers. Since we did this episode on November 21st, before Thanksgiving last year, we also looked at ways to reduce leftovers. So maybe that's something you'll want to try next year if you just feel overwhelmed right now. But whatever your leftover scenario, we hope you'll enjoy this edition of The Kitchen's Open from November 21st, 2022.
The stage is all yours.
All right. So I don't know if anybody knows, but Thanksgiving is this week.
Mm-hmm.
So while it's a feast for the eyes, the stomach, and the senses, after all it's said and done, what do you do with all the leftovers? So today we're going to discuss what you can do to not only physically deal with the massive amount of food you may have left over, but also ways to mentally prepare.
Always good to do both.
Yes, indeed. Now, after the big meal, I don't know about you guys, but I always like to have at least one more meal of the leftovers just straight up. So many of us enjoy that really full holiday spread, the turkey, the mashed potatoes, the stuffing, the cranberry sauce, gravy, all the sides. But how do you reheat it without losing integrity?
And it can be challenging depending on what device you're using. So, you know, a lot of us have this wonderful little box that sits on a counter in our kitchen called a microwave, which is a great place to go with it. But you need to worry about moisture with that. It can dry out very easily. So to reheat in the microwave, add something that's going to be a little bit of moisture to it. So you could add like broth, chicken broth with the turkey, something like that, or a little butter, and it keeps everything from drying out. Make sure that you cover it. Parchment paper will work. You could use a paper plate. There are actually companies that will sell a cover for over a plate. So if you wanted to do a plate instead of the container, you could do that.
For the microwave.
Yeah. Or you could always do what a lot of people like to do, is just smother it all with gravy again, because that gravy will give it the moisture that it needs. But you want to do every so often, stir it, because microwaves have a tendency to heat things unevenly. So the more that you can do that every, you know, 30 seconds to a minute or so, that'll help it reheat evenly.
Yes. And you can also reheat on the stove, and you want to do the same thing. Add a tablespoon of oil or butter to the pan and heat it on medium. Give things a stir now and then to evenly distribute the heat, and also covering the pan will help to retain moisture.
Yep. Now, you also have to remember, leftovers are usually only good for about 3 to 4 days in the refrigerator. So after that, it starts to gather the bacteria and it could start to make you sick. So you want to make sure that you eat it within that time frame. But there comes a point where all of us kind of get sick of doing that same meal
same old time.
So what do you can do is maybe look for things for each individual ingredient, or figure out other ways to incorporate other ingredients into that.
Well, casserole is the first obvious choice for many in the Midwest. I found this amazing recipe, which I am so excited to try. So I found it on favefamilyrecipes.com, F-A-V, familyrecipes.com. And it really, combines everything. So you start with an 8 by 8 or 9 by 13 pan, however big you want to make it. And then you combine the gravy with the cranberry sauce
to give
it your base. And then you can layer in the mashed potatoes and corn or whatever other veg you have. And then add a layer of gravy, sprinkle the leftover stuffing on top of that. And then you want to drizzle a little bit of chicken broth or melted butter so that the stuffing doesn't get dried out.
Cover that
with a tin foil and bake it in a 400 degree oven for 25 to 30 minutes until it's heated through.
That sounds delicious. And that may be the one way that we can get James to eat the meal with everything touching.
Maybe.
It's true. It's very true.
And if you don't want to do the everything that you had at the one meal in one casserole, try adding other things and focus on an individual side dish or ingredient that you want. We all know that leftovers are never left in equal quantities. So to make sure that you have enough. So there's always a family member who wants to eat the stuffing, or maybe takes more of the mashed potatoes or cranberry sauce. And there are some websites out there that you can go to just type in that single ingredient that you have left over, and it'll give you recipes that you can add things to. So allrecipes.com has broken things down, hasn't it, Mel?
Yeah, so you can look for cranberry leftovers, potato leftovers, turkey leftovers. Apparently nobody leaves stuffing leftovers, so there wasn't a category for that. But they have a lot of different recipes for things pertaining to turkey, such as pot pie, tetrazzini. Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
I've never eaten it, so I don't know. But I hear it's delicious.
Yeah.
Soup. Salad. There are even salad recipes out there.
Amazing that you could use all of your leftovers for salads. Parade.com also has 67 different recipes that not only includes the leftovers, but also adds another item to create new dishes in case you're tired of the same old, and having everything thrown into one pot. So things such as leftover ham tortellini, ham fried rice with pineapples, potato cups with cheddar and chives. That sounds yummy. Mashed potato casserole with crispy chicken and leftover pumpkin pie spice bread.
Interesting.
Yeah. A fun one is a recipe for leftover crunch wrap. Think Taco Bell meets Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm totally there for that one.
Another place you could go is maybe a family cookbook. I know we have I have a recipe that I got from my grandmother that uses the leftover turkey. It was originally a chicken casserole recipe, and I throw in turkey instead, and it uses elbow macaroni, cream of chicken or mushroom soup, a little bit of sour cream, and then you top it with crunched up Ritz crackers with some melted butter, and that becomes the crispy topping. It is delicious.
Ooh, that sounds really good. My mom always made turkey a la king.
Oh, yeah.
After Thanksgiving. That was her favorite thing, and I despised it as a child. I absolutely hated it because she put pimentos in there, and I just thought pimentos were disgusting.
You got to find a good recipe. Yeah.
I mean, I would enjoy it now. Like, if I could eat my mother's turkey a la king again, I would probably cry.
Yeah.
But tears of joy. But yes, no, that was her favorite thing to make after Thanksgiving.
And there are actually recipes out there if you do happen to have stuffing left over. I mean, granted, that's probably the thing that's going to go first on your table. But my mother-in-law uses the leftover stuffing and makes an egg casserole out of it for breakfast the next morning.
Oh, nice.
So if you wanted to try and set some aside, and you can find recipes online for that as well.
That's a great idea, because after all of that cooking, having something you can just pop in the oven for breakfast the next day, that's a really great idea.
And you can make that the night before, refrigerate it, so all it has to do is go in the oven that next morning.
That's perfect. Well, we have to, talk about soup, obviously, because you can make awesome soups with leftovers, and the turkey carcass can be used a second time to make broth that you can freeze to use later.
Absolutely, and it's such a creative medium. Almost anything can go when it comes to soup. You could simmer your carrots, onions, garlic to create the beginnings, and then just go from there. Add whatever leftovers you desire with enough broth to cover and make delicious soup to eat all week. It also freezes well, so it doesn't need to be eaten for too many meals in a row, and you can keep those leftovers going for, all the way up through Christmas.
Right? So also, when you cook your turkey carcass to make the soup stock, another option you have is making bone broth. I don't know if you've been hearing the word, excitement around bone broth lately.
Yeah.
It's similar to making soup stock, but you simmer the bones for a long time.
Okay.
So I usually cook mine in low in the crock pot overnight.
Oh.
Or for at least 12 hours.
Wow.
If you add a little bit of apple cider vinegar, that will help break down the animal proteins in the connective tissue.
Okay.
And that adds more nutrition and more protein and more collagen to your broth. So the bone broth is really good for your joints, digestive system, and skin. It also makes a really delicious soup.
It sounds like a great base for a soup. So what if you don't want to have what if you don't have a variety of leftovers, and you still want to have some ideas of what to make in that next week? What can we do?
Yeah, if you don't want to have leftovers, you could ask each of your guests to bring a Tupperware dish with to take leftovers home, or just have a stock of empty containers on hand that you don't mind giving to your guests to take stuff home with them. It's an awesome way to make sure that the food gets used, and it takes the onus off you as the host to fit everything into your fridge afterwards.
Yeah, and these are great ideas if you don't want to have to worry about making all those leftover meals afterwards. You could plan your meal as a potluck and have everyone bring their dish, and then that way they can take their dish home with them, and you're not left with their leftovers as well.
Right. Another great idea is to use freezeable dishes to create those casseroles or easy to reheat meals that you can immediately freeze to use later. This is a great idea if you want easy family meals on weeknights or quick things to grab to take with you for work.
Yeah.
You just have to have a microwave at work to heat them up.
And remember to add the moisture.
Right. Put that pat of butter in before you throw it in the freezer.
But the big thing with Thanksgiving is the time that we get to spend with friends around the table eating all of this delicious food. So enjoy that time together.
And don't stress about it.
Right.
And hopefully this will give you some tips and ideas to help make that time enjoyable.
And the internet is always a great place to go for ideas.
Oh goodness, yes. There's so many recipes out there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I think we should close the kitchen.
I think with that, the kitchen's closed, James.
Kitchen's closed, everybody. We're not- Guess what? You asked for it and you got it. The oldest furnace contest is back. Tri-City Services is giving away a free furnace to the winner of the oldest furnace contest. Whoever has the oldest working furnace in the Wisconsin Rapids area will win a free furnace. Yes, a free furnace. What are the rules, you ask? Well, entrants must own and reside in their home in the Wisconsin Rapids area. The furnace must be functional and the main heat source for your house. Pretty easy. So take a picture of that old dinosaur furnace and enter online at calltricity.com. Contest ends November 30th, so hurry. Enter your dinosaur furnace in the oldest furnace contest at Tri-City Services. Restrictions apply. Enter online at calltricity.com before November 30th.
You're not comfortable until
severe weather hits and the power goes out. Do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
I'm Dr. Stork. Eggs are a staple in our diets, and there's only one egg with more delicious farm-fresh taste plus superior nutrition. Eggland's Best. With more vitamins, including 6 times more vitamin D and 10 times more vitamin E, plus 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. Available in so many delicious varieties. Classic, cage-free, and organic. Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs.
The morning show on WFHR. It's informative.
Have neither of you been on sleigh rides before?
Yeah, never. No. I've never been on.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've been on like dozens. Oh my gosh.
We gotta do it.
And I don't even like winter.
What kind of life are you living, Seth?
He was way up in the,
Northern Minnesota, yeah. I mean, come on.
Where every neighbor has a sleigh in their barn.
Big words from someone from Toma.
Oh, it's on now, bro.
Every weekday from 8 to 10 on Locally Grown Radio.
Here's your forecast from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR. 30 today, under sunny skies, northwest winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. 17 tonight, cloudy. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 14.
Welcome back to our Marathon Kitchens Open segment here on WFHR. This next episode is one of my favorites. I'm a sucker for radio dramas, and the chance to include one in a kitchen segment was just too tempting. This episode is about leftover containers and gives Seth and James a chance to have a little fun with missing Tupperware lids. We also talk about the history of reusable containers and how they evolved over the years. Here's our Kitchens Open radio drama about food containers from August 21st, 2023. Welcome to the Kitchens Open here on WFHR. This week, we're talking food containers.
Like tin cans and bottles?
Not quite. We're going to dive in into what we used to store leftovers in.
Wait, you mean we're going to finally have an answer to where the matching lids to my plastic containers went?
This week on the Kitchens Open, the case of the missing Tupperware lid.
Ooh, I knew we'd get to this eventually. Drama in the kitchen. But first, we need to thank our sponsor.
Oh, for sure. We want to thank the Southwood County YMCA for sponsoring our Kitchens Open segment. Great, we've covered our sponsors.
Now, back to the mystery.
It was a dark and stormy night. As Esmeralda searched for her missing green sock, she walked into the kitchen lit by flashes of lightning.
As she crossed the linoleum floor, she saw to her horror the Tupperware drawer was open.
Had someone or something been in her kitchen? It was the second week of blue lids going missing.
She felt the frustration rise up to her throat like a scream, ready to vent her rage to the skies.
Okay, seriously, guys, can we focus here? We all know the end of the story.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Melissa. Sorry.
Everybody knows how this tale ends. Can we get back on track now?
You take the fun out of everything.
I know. I'm just the spoil sport wanting to talk about leftover containers.
To be fair, that topic does cause some drama in the kitchen all on its own, even without the dark and stormy night stuff.
All right, fine.
But you know, I was just getting into my groove there.
Well, maybe we'll come back to it. But for now, let's talk about the different containers we all have in our kitchens currently.
Oh my gosh. Mm. I got glass. I got plastic. Mm. I've got probably something that I've never identified yet. Yeah. Something there. I know we're talking about Tupperware maybe a little bit, but I love the glass. We got this set of glass ones that have this really cool plastic lid that kind of that's got flaps on it.
And you can flip it open for the steam?
Yeah, exactly. And it's got a little hole in the top that you can cover if you want to, but you can do it. So I really like those.
That's cool.
I still have my share of Tupperware, though, too.
I got to say, Seth, I am impressed, or not, with your selection.
Don't blame you.
I actually am impressed. I could try to list some things off, but you guys know me. I don't eat things that leave leftovers. I'm cooked for myself. Who wants part of a leftover double bacon cheeseburger? No one in human history has said that. Seriously, though, the best leftovers are pasta. As everyone knows, leftover pasta should be stored in glass containers. You know, the tomato sauce stains plastic, and then they just look and smell bad forever. And even if you clean it's good, the stain is still there.
That's very true, James, especially the plastic we all used when we were kids. Speaking of those good old days, let's take a quick dip into the history of plastic. Mm.
According to Britannica.com, celluloid was the first synthetic plastic material. It was developed in the 1860s and 70s from a combination of nitrocellulose and camphor. It was a tough, flexible, and moldable material resistant to waters, oils, and dilute acids.
Some historians trace the invention to the English chemist Alexander Parkin. He was granted the first of several patents in 1856 for the plastic material he called Parkenstein.
Now, sciencehistory.com tells us the first synthetic polymer was invented in 1869 by John Wesley Hyatt, who was inspired by a New York firm's offer of $10,000. That was a lot of money back then. For anyone who could provide a substitute for ivory. The growing popularity of billiards had put a strain on the supply of natural ivory obtained through the slaughter of wild elephants.
The discovery of these man-made products provided an affordable and practical substitute for natural materials such as ivory, tortoise shell, and horn. Advertisers claim these new plastics would protect the natural world from the destructive forces of human need.
And products made with these natural materials were popular until the 1920s and 30s and used to make everything from combs and piano keys to detachable collars and cuffs for men's clothing, and most notably it as a medium for film and motion pictures.
The downsides of celluloid were the tendency to soften under heat, being highly flammable, that's scary, and off-gassing. It was replaced with synthetic plastics not derived from plants and animals but from fossil fuels.
Early celluloid objects have become collector's items and museum artifacts. They're valued as specimens of an artificial plastic based on naturally occurring raw materials. Did you know the only thing celluloid is still commonly used for is making ping pong balls?
I didn't know that.
No, me neither. Jeez.
I mean, they are very specific. Like, we get a good ping pong ball.
It's true.
But when they get dented, then they're kind of
That's true. And I don't know many people who use them in the kitchen, so they don't melt.
Right.
I would hope, anyway, that they don't use them in the kitchen.
I've tried. It doesn't work. Yep. Even after all these years and inventions of different products, they still haven't found a way to replace the celluloid ping pong ball.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, World War II caused the greatest expansion of the plastics industry in the U.S. Synthetic alternatives provided cheap options to replace natural products. Think nylon to replace silk for parachutes, plexiglass instead of glass for aircraft windows. During World War II, plastic production increased by 300% in the U.S. It was viewed as a safe, sanitary substance that we could shape into whatever we needed or wanted.
It wasn't until the 1960s and people started noticing the large amount of plastic containers, our oceans and environment, that the shift in perspective came.
People started talking more about the dangers of chemical exposure and the persistence of plastic waste. By the 1970s and 80s, the reputation of plastic fell even further. People became more educated about the negative effects of chemicals leaching into our food and environment because of fossil fuel-based plastic containers.
Enter the 1980s and the recycling hoax.
Don't get me started.
Nice job, Seth. Now our segment is completely derailed. I'm imagining Melissa climbing up on her soapbox right about now.
Now, as much as I would like to discuss how corporations use the recycling myth as a way to just produce more plastic instead of talking about ways to reduce and reuse it, And the fact that less than 10% of plastic products is recycled or recyclable in today's markets, and how as vehicles move away from the demand for fuel, the oil and gas industry will double down on single-use plastics as their last gasping breath to stay alive. We'll stay focused on the topic at hand.
Okay.
Hang on 1 second. I just got to give her that bell. That was really good. That was a great rant. That was a good rant.
Thank you.
So back to the conversation about how to store leftovers.
Yes. So storing food in plastic containers is usually okay in the fridge or countertop. The danger comes with heating plastics. We know there are some plastic containers that should never be heated, but some are, quote, safer, unquote, than others. The dangerous plastics contain BPA and should always be avoided if possible.
The BPA chemicals are found in various types of food packaging. You can reduce your exposure by avoiding plastic with recycling codes 3 and 7. If you expose these plastics to heat, such as microwaving, you risk transferring the chemicals to your foods.
BPAs are added to plastic to help them keep their shape and pliability, but they have been linked to negative health issues, including hormone disruptions, respiratory issues, and cardiovascular diseases.
So we could get into the weeds with discussions about the different plastics and what's good or at least better and what's bad. But instead, let's talk about other alternatives you can find to store leftovers in. As Jane mentioned earlier, one of the best options is glass containers.
Glass is a great option. The marinara sauce stays fresh. It never stains the container. Other flavors don't leach into it. My leftover pasta is still great the next day, and I can remove the lid and pop it right on into the microwave without a worry.
Glass containers can also go into the freezer and the oven. Of course, you'll also want to remove the lid for the oven. Most glass containers come with plastic lids. It's recommended not to put them in the microwave or even the dishwasher. They will last longer and the less heat they're exposed to.
Another great option, and one I'm actually currently looking into, are silicone containers. I have a couple of silicone reusable bags that I like using, but they also have a full array of containers. You can find ones that nest into each other for easy storage, or ones that even collapse.
I've seen the bags. Those are nice and come in multiple sizes. You can even get a special stand to dry them on.
The important thing is to know about silicone is it doesn't go cheap. The cheap versions often still contain plastic fillers. If you twist silicone and it changes color, it has plastic filler in between the layers. You want to make sure you are buying products that contain 100% silicone.
Silicone is a man-made inorganic polymer. Food-grade silicone is non-toxic and does not contain petroleum-based chemicals. It's made from non-toxic silica, a natural compound that makes up over a quarter of the planet's crust and is found in rocks, clays, and sand.
Another great property of silicone containers is that they're antifungal and non-stick. They're also more durable than plastic and have a longer lifespan. They can be used in the freezer, microwave, and many of them even in the oven. They're dishwasher-safe and resistant to food oils and most chemicals.
So I really do think I'm going to invest in these for leftovers and also for preparing meals that can be frozen and then taken on the road and reheated in the microwave or a heating element. The silicone containers I'm looking at are actually shaped like bags, but they have a flat bottom and stand up on the counter even when they're empty. So the company I'm researching is based in Texas, so they're American-made, and the product is called Zip Top. I'm only in the early stages of research, so I don't know if I can recommend them yet, but their marketing is pretty awesome. You guys will have to check out the commercial. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you do get them, you'll have to let us know how they work out.
Mm-hmm. I will. They're not cheap, but I think the investment is worth it for our health in my household and the future of the environment. It's possible inventors may still do something with seaweed-based plastic alternatives, but for now, this looks like the best option to replace the plastic in my kitchen.
We have to work with what we know. When these products first came about, the effort behind them was to protect elephants and turtles.
Well, that didn't exactly pan out as planned.
Yeah, but they didn't know that then, or at least that's what we tell ourselves. Now that we know more about what harm these chemicals are causing to humans, animals, and the environment, I find it important to make what improvements I can in my daily life to mitigate plastic use.
Oh, very well said. I think we're running out of time, though, Mel.
You know, I guess you're right, James. We should probably thank our sponsor and close the segment.
Wait. The lightning intensified as the storm rolled in. Esmeralda turned to follow the trail of microplastics to the laundry room.
She hesitated to turn on the light. She didn't want to alert anyone of anything to her lurking, searching, inquisitive presence.
The frustration after not being able to find the blue lid again the week to cover her leftover lasagna had turned her into a raging fury, much like the storm outside.
She approached the dryer with the intensity of a detective on the trail of a murderer. It wasn't a murderer she was seeking, but the unaccounted for items necessary for her sanity. It was conceivable to her. It wasn't conceivable to have the refrigerator smelling like an Italian restaurant every time she opened the door.
Plus, her left foot was really cold.
With the speed of a tiger and the brilliance of Sherlock, she wrenched the dryer away from the wall.
And she found both the green sock and the blue lid. Guys, this is a family show, so we won't elucidate any further, and we'll leave the rest to your imagination.
And the dish ran away with the spoon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Kitchen's Open here on WFHR. We want to thank our sponsor, the Southwood County YMCA. And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Hey. All right. Very good.
That was a great one.
Very good.
Nicely done,
nice job,
Melissa.
Guys.
Nicely done. Keep in mind, every Monday, 9 o'clock hour, you'll have The Kitchens Open right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Hi, this is Chuck Gennaro, station manager, WFHR and WIRI. All of us here wish you, your family, and those special to you a wonderful, peaceful, and relaxing Thanksgiving and upcoming holiday season.
Hey there, everyone. James J. Maloff here, host and program director with WFHR, wishing you all a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy!
Hi, everybody. This is Mike Comer, sports broadcaster on WIRI. I'd just like to wish everybody a very safe and happy deer season and a very happy Thanksgiving.
Whether it's football, basketball, or butterball, this is Randy Paul wishing you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, everyone. This is Seth Habhager, head of production and host of Seth Faces the Music and Trail Tunes on WFHR and WIRI, wishing everyone a happy and safe Thanksgiving.
This is Pamela Hilke, traffic director and office manager here at WFHR and WIRI Radio. I'd like to wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. We have the very best listeners. Thank you.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
You don't want to miss 60% off everything during the once-a-year Black Friday event, only at your nearest Banana Republic Factory store. Bring home must-have styles and gifting favorites with limited-time deals from just $15. Exergen thermometers are the smart choice when selecting your thermometer because accuracy matters. Exergen thermometers are fast, non-invasive, and clinically accurate for medical and home use. Find Exergen thermometers at Walgreens and other participating retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
We are born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at ZeroInWisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. Help Smile Train change the world one smile at a time. Learn more at smiletrain.org/learn.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. 30 today, under sunny skies, northwest winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. 17 tonight, cloudy. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 14.
Welcome back. These final two episodes feature Beth in the first one with me and Seth in the second with James and I. Over a year ago, Beth and I did a Kitchens Open segment on pumpkins. I edited this a bit to cut out the mentions of Halloween, but right now is still pumpkin season, so it's perfectly relevant and useful information. The second segment is the one we did on pie, Seth's favorite food. This is another favorite of mine and one we had a lot of fun with. I want to thank you for joining us today for this extra special Kitchens Open Hour and for, as James says, being the best listeners in radio. Happy Thanksgiving.
pumpkins.
Yes.
So this time of year means cooler temps with some sunny days, but also crisp evenings for sure. So let's talk about some fun pumpkin food ideas to delight kids and adults alike.
You can actually use pumpkin in multiple things,
right,
other than just pumpkin pie, which mm-hmm. seems to be everybody's go-to. So there are many different pumpkin and squash, because pumpkin is a type of squash, so you can use several different kinds of squash. Dishes out there that might be fun. We were talking in the last segment about turkeys being light, so maybe come up with a pumpkin lasagna sometime during the month. Doesn't that sound? So think of your usual lasagna ingredients. You've got your noodles and cheeses like ricotta, mozzarella, parmesan. Did I do okay with that?
Perfect.
Okay, thank you. garlic, onion, and spices. And then add pumpkin puree or a fresh pumpkin and maybe some maple syrup and nutmeg. Yeah.
Interesting.
Some recipes call for a white sauce and mushrooms. Others use Italian sausage, tomato sauce, and zucchini. It seems like you can go just about any way you would like with this interesting addition to traditional comfort food with a little bit of a fall twist in there for you.
Yeah, I've never even considered pumpkin lasagna.
No.
What an interesting and fun idea.
Yeah.
So here's another one, pumpkin cheese dip or pumpkin queso. If you're having a big party and people are coming over, a lot of times you have those appetizer foods. Mm-hmm. Well, this is one you can go savory or sweet with. If you add cream cheese, sugar, and spices to pumpkin puree, that would make a delicious dip for cookies, pretzels, fruits, nuts.
Yeah.
But if you want to go savory with a great presentation, start with a whole pumpkin.
Okay.
Cut the top open, remove the seeds and the fiber, and then you rub the inside with oil, and then you add in your layers of queso. So breadcrumbs, cheese, garlic, half and half or cream, and the spices. And then you put the top on, and you bake it.
Wow.
Just like that.
Oh.
So then when you pull it out, you want to make sure, obviously, you cool it, because mm-hmm. it's been in there for a couple hours. Cool it before you dive in, but then you just take the top off, stir, and you're probably going to stir it a couple times while it's baking.
Right.
Just to incorporate all of that and then the flavors, but what a fun way to have an awesome presentation of queso at your party.
Yeah, well, because you think that the exterior of the pumpkin is going to stay stiff and solid, mm-hmm. but the flesh of it inside is all going to kind of melt and get gooey and be able to be incorporated. That's a great idea.
Mix it up together and then serve it with, whatever you want to dip in there. Mm-hmm. Pretzels, pretzel sticks, crackers, your normal queso things.
Awesome. Oh, that sounds yummy. Another possibility, and this one might take a little bit more time, and it's a wonderful side dish again, pumpkin risotto. So if you've never made risotto, and I have to say, I've never done it because it seems a little intimidating. I can't recommend it enough, though. If you've had a good risotto, you've had a good risotto. It's important to use the right kind of rice, though, and experts recommend Arborio or Carnaroli?
I think it's Carnaroli. I've never seen it in the store.
Yeah, me neither. But Arborio is easy to find in most stores.
Mm-hmm.
So that you
mm-hmm.
would still be able to make this. Now, risotto is labor intensive. That's why it's not made as often. But if you add mm-hmm. chicken or vegetable stock and a little thyme, and you stir it until all of that is absorbed into the rice, the addition of a pumpkin puree from the start can make it a little bit less of a chore. It can help to incorporate that. And you can add cheese if you'd like at the end, and it really, with just that pumpkin puree, isn't going to need it. It's going to have that nice flavor to it.
Mm-hmm. And also with the pumpkin puree in there, it adds a lot more moisture mm-hmm. from the start, where then as you're adding your chicken stock, because what you do is you heat up the rice and then you mix the pumpkin puree in, and then you add enough stock to make it thickness of stew.
Right.
And then as soon as that is absorbed, you add more stock. As soon as that is absorbed, and until you get all of your stock absorbed, it creates just creamy, delicious, just so yummy. Risotto is amazing. I love it.
Yes.
So it's less intensive than you think at the outset, but you do have to.
It just takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of the time thing. You need to be with it the whole time rather than being able to just put it in a pot and walk away. You need to be attentive to it.
Exactly. But here's one you don't necessarily have to be so attentive to. Pumpkin curry. So curry is my new go-to dish. In the last few years, I've just been absolutely in love with curry. It's so versatile. And pumpkin is one I haven't tried yet, so I really can't wait to taste this. It contains all the usual curry ingredients like ginger, garlic, turmeric, curry powder or paste, and coconut milk. But instead of adding meat to your veggies, you can chunk up pumpkin or butternut squash and cook it all together so it's done even faster than your usual curry with a meat protein. But if you want to add protein to this, cashews are really great, or even like a tofu.
Yeah, that sounds yummy. And
it does.
And you can vary the spice on it for those that have a blander palate.
Yep.
So, or you can make it as spicy as you want to.
And there's a lot of, I mean, curry is so... Like, if you, you talk about curry, you know, we all think, okay, well, that's an Indian dish. But in India, curry is different all the way across the region.
Right.
Every different place has a different curry. Well, so it can be whatever you want it to be.
Yep. And just like there are different types of cinnamons and things like that around here. So it depends on the spice. Yep. Another option would be pumpkin sage gnocchi. Or is it gnocchi? Gnocchi?
Gnocchi.
You got to get the gna in there. Okay, we picked that one because it's fun to say gnocchi, right? Yep. But it's also a fun and different thing to make for dinner, and it's so filling and so delicious. For those of you who don't know, gnocchi is basically a soft, fat, and chewy dumpling usually made with plain wheat flour, egg, and mashed potato. You can buy them pre-made in the pasta aisle and often served with butter or tomato sauce. So, but this recipe livens it up with pumpkin puree, sage, heavy cream, chicken broth, garlic, parmesan, and black pepper.
Yum.
Yeah.
Sounds delicious. I would just substitute it for coconut cream and be good to go.
There you go. And that's what's wonderful about a lot of these recipes is you can just kind of substitute and vary what you need to make it healthy for you.
So we did promise one for the kids. So in case you have picky little ones in your house, how about this? Butternut squash mac and cheese or pumpkin bacon mac and cheese?
Ooh.
So my grandma Ruth used to make the best mac and cheese from scratch. So I can only imagine that this would taste just like that ooey gooey deliciousness, but even better with the addition of pumpkin and, of course, bacon.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with bacon.
Somebody say bacon.
We just woke James up.
Sorry. Somebody called me.
So you can mix up the ingredients and then you put it in a baking dish. You can even top it with breadcrumbs for more crunch and more cheese. And then you bake it in the oven and it comes out just so delicious.
I bet there would be an alternative to do it stovetop because that's how I like to make my mac and cheese.
Yes.
So you would just kind of add the cream and all of that in a sauce on top and then just throw in the macaroni when you're done.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Yum.
Ready to go. You don't have to bake it. Yeah. But if you wanted to make it more of a casserole, so it's versatile that way as well. So as I was looking into all of this, there turned out to be so many delicious pumpkin recipes that I couldn't even get to them all. But let's talk for just a quick second about soups.
Yes.
Because their soup is... Of course, it's fall. It's now soup season. But pumpkin can also be incorporated into your soup.
Yes.
So think sausage, pumpkin, and there's that arborio rice
there
again.
There you go.
That would be delicious.
Or pork and pumpkin chili. Add that to your chili. You know, give a nice little creaminess to there.
So maybe the pumpkin instead of tomatoes?
Yeah.
That could be one I could eat.
There you go.
And I've made this once. Curried butternut squash soup, and it was so delicious because it's a pureed soup, so it's smooth and creamy, and it just has the most delicious mouthfeel.
Sounds yummy. I bet you could do it with carrots as well. I bet carrot and pumpkin would be a great combination.
Yeah. And then you add in ginger.
Yep.
It would be so yummy.
Oh, yeah. Well,
we have to talk about desserts.
Absolutely.
So, James mentioned this the other week. I believe we were talking about some things. So, pumpkin cheesecake bars, James.
Yeah.
This happens to be a no-bake pumpkin cheesecake bar.
Ooh.
And it's also gluten-free and dairy-free.
Wow.
So, it's one I could eat. And my former roommate could also eat it as well. So, you make the crust with dates and raw pecans, or pecans, however you say it. And then your cheesecake filling is cashews, pumpkin puree, pumpkin spice, maple syrup, vanilla, coconut oil, and lemon juice.
Wow.
And when you obviously you make the crust separate and you do put the cheesecake filling and then you freeze it.
Oh, yum.
So that's the longest part of this recipe, and the most difficult part is you do have to wait 4 to 5 hours for it to freeze completely before you can eat it. But it sounds delicious. I think I might have to make it.
Yeah, and just pre-plan it. If you have an event that you're preparing for and you have a couple of days that you like, mm-hmm. I can't do it that day, but I still want something unique. This would be a great idea for that.
The only problem is it obviously has a lot of nuts in it, so it's not completely allergy-free.
Okay. Well, I have one that I've gone to that is more of a healthy alternative to regular brownies. Mm-hmm. They're called Yum Yum Brownie Muffins, and they are some of the easiest things in the world to make because it's only two ingredients. It's just pumpkin puree and a box of Devil's Food cake mix. And you don't add any of the other things. You just mix those two up, put them in muffin tins, and you bake them. And they are phenomenal. You taste the chocolatiness of the brownie, not even realizing the pumpkin's in there. But there's that little hint of that pumpkin. And you can always add the pumpkin spice to it if you want to make it more of a pumpkin flavor to it. Yeah.
That would be good, though, because chocolate and pumpkin is not something you'd think of often together.
Yeah.
But that would be really delicious.
They are phenomenal. And they're so easy to make. You know, you can do it in 15 minutes and you're done.
Mm-hmm. So, two ingredients.
Yeah.
Gosh, can't get much simpler than
exactly.
So there's a lot of obviously dessert recipes out there. Pumpkin rice pudding, pumpkin spice latte whoopie pies.
Oh, and
I saw a recipe for that. I thought that was hilarious.
And don't forget the popular one this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkin pie.
Got to have that pie.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, Seth will come down on us.
It is true.
Somebody,
if I don't mention it.
Somebody say pumpkin pie.
Oh, maybe it'll be James. This is his favorite pie.
This is true. Yeah.
I think he's mentioned it once or twice.
So pumpkin is a much more diverse
it's
usable.
Versatile.
That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Versatile food than a lot of people think. We just automatically, we hear pumpkin, we go to the pumpkin pie. But
yeah, pumpkin pie and jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah.
But it doesn't end there. I actually went grocery shopping this weekend, and in the produce aisle, they had pumpkins for sale. I got a huge one for $4.99.
Wow.
Do you know how much I'm going to be able to? I probably can make like four of these recipes with one pumpkin.
Well, and be mindful.
That's a lot of food.
That is. But fresh pumpkin that you kind of make into a puree yourself is going to taste a little bit different than the canned stuff that you get.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to taste more rich. It's going to taste more full. But explore. See what more you can do than just Thanksgiving.
Or open a can and make pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we should close the kitchen,
I think
Beth.
The kitchen's now closed, James. Oh,
that was great, you guys. That was really good. That was a fun one.
Tell me something good.
Welcome to The Kitchen's Open on WFHR, the segment where we talk all things kitchen, share insight into a particular topic of my choice, and attempt to make you laugh while we do so.
Hey, did we find a sponsor yet?
Almost. Ashley and I have several things in the works. More on that in the coming weeks.
Oh, good. I am relieved to hear that. We love our sponsors. As head of heads around here, aside, you might want to find a sponsor for the segment, Melissa. It might not be a bad idea.
Oh, don't worry. Your underheads have everything firmly in hand.
I'm not quite sure how I feel about that term, underheads. I'm not sure.
Well, let's move on then.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We do have a special guest with us here today. He is a valued member of our team and always holds a special position that makes him eminently qualified for the topic of, I'm getting to that. A discussion on this important topic of... Would you stop that? This important topic that
pie.
Yes, our topic is pie. Hold on 1 second, listeners. James, I need a moment with you.
Yes.
I thought we agreed you were going to keep him under control.
I seem to remember that conversation. I don't know what happened.
So, what's going on? Why aren't you doing what we agreed on?
Because it's too much fun, Melissa.
James!
It really is. I'm genuinely laughing right now. In my defense, you're not here, and you can't see the absolute glee on his face every time he says the word pie.
Pie.
Okay, fine. I apologize, listeners. We're back. Seth.
Pie. I mean, yes.
I thought I would lead us in this topic of the segment today, but as a member of the Pie Council, I believe you should be the one in charge.
Why? Yes, I would be honored to take over this segment. In fact, it could not go any other way. As chair of the North American Pan of the Midwest Crust of the Central Wisconsin Filling of the Pie Council, I would be delighted.
Excellent. Take it away. We usually start with the history.
Oh, right. Right, of course. The history. Well, the history of the pie goes back thousands of years, according to history.net.com. HistoryNet.com. As far back as 5 or 6,000 BC, ancient Egyptians made a rustic free-form pie known as galettes. Early pie crusts were made of ground oats, wheat, rye, or barley, and contained honey inside.
And they didn't just make sweet pies. Archaeologists found a recipe for a chicken pie that was written on a tablet in Sumer sometime before 2000 BC.
But it's the ancient Greeks who invented the pie pastry around the 5th century BC. Fat added to a water and flour mixture makes paste, hence pastry. They recognized the trade of someone who made pastries to be different from someone who was a baker.
Now, the Romans took that idea and expanded on it. According to historynet.com, they used a pastry made with flour, oil, and water to put a cover over their meats. It wasn't necessarily meant to be eaten. It actually served the purpose of preserving the juices in the meat to keep it from drying out.
As the Romans expanded and they built roads, the practice of cooking pies this way spread through Europe. They even made what we would call a cheesecake with a pastry base. It had many layers of dough and a mixture of cheese and honey inside. It was flavored with bay leaves after baking, covered in honey.
Yum. Mm-hmm. Pies were also a way to preserve food, and they were often used for traveling. Like we mentioned earlier, the crusts were not necessarily intended for eating, especially in meat pies. Crusts were often baked first to create a pot of hard-baked dough, which they then used to put the filling in before baking that. They would then put a removable top crust to keep things from drying out.
Hey, is that where the term pot pie came from?
Mm. It sure could be.
Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye, 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was open, the birds begin to sing. Wasn't that a dainty dish to set before the king?
Ah, yes. The strange tradition in Europe of putting live birds into pie crusts to delight and entertain guests at banquets. And it wasn't just birds. There are tales of rabbits, frogs, turtles, and even people being encased in animated pies as a popular form of entertainment, obviously for the rich only.
There is an interesting story I found on whatscookingamerica.net that happened in 1626. A famous 17th century dwarf was served in a pie to 15-year-old Queen Henrietta Maria of England. She was married to King Charles I, and they were at a banquet given in their honor by the Duke and Duchess of Buckingham. An enormous crust-covered pie was brought to the table. But before the queen could cut into it, 7-year-old Geoffrey Hudson emerged from the pie in a full suit of miniature armor. He was only 18 inches tall. He was the smallest human anyone had ever seen. The queen was enchanted and later dubbed him Lord Minimus.
Ooh.
Sir Hudson stayed with the queen for the next 18 years, serving as a trusted companion and court favorite.
Oh, is that cool? I'm glad we've progressed from that time and don't put little people inside of desserts anymore. Oh, wait, they still do that with pretty girls and large cakes for birthdays or surprise parties, don't they? Never mind. I guess we have not progressed
that far. That's why cake isn't as good as pie. Pie has grown.
Yes, Seth. At least for today, I will concede that pie is better.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk more about what's inside of pies that you can actually eat. Meat pies were very common in Europe and other parts of the world during the 15th to the 17th century. Like we said before, the fillings cooked in a crust were highly transportable, and they could be cooked over an open fire, so you didn't need to have an oven.
This was especially useful as colonists were spreading across America in the 1700s. The recipes for pies changed as the ingredients changed. They used fruits and berries, but also incorporated North American vegetables and game.
came with guidance from indigenous people.
Pie was more popular than bread because it didn't use as much flour. It was an easy way to stretch meager provisions because they added whatever they had to the mixture to make it last. As time went on, pies became a staple in New England households. They sometimes ate them at every meal.
Heaven.
Pie for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
But pies took the brunt of the health movement during the late 19th and early 20th century. According to a blog post called Pieology, a full filling story, great title, written by Jennifer Harbister, pies received condemnation from health progressives such as Sarah Tyson Rohrer, who wrote articles for the Ladies' Home Journal such as Why I Have No Cakes and Pies on My Table and Why I Oppose Pies. She even wrote that the inside of a pie is injurious and pies and cakes are indigestible.
Take away all the joy in the world. Well, good thing we moved on from that by the mid-20th century, where manufacturers started making instant pudding mixes, canned fruit, and frozen and ready-to-make pie crusts. Now even people like Melissa can make pies at home.
Hey!
Pies have continued to grow in popularity, and there's a ton of recipes out there.
But hold on. He said I can't
make... You don't even have to make the crust now.
Yeah, but...
James, she said before that she couldn't bake pies. I don't know why she would even try to cover this topic. It's a good thing I'm here today.
Okay, that's true. I have said I struggle making pie crusts, but both of my grandmothers were experts at it. And don't tell Seth, I really love pie. Mm-hmm. All kinds of pie. I love cottage pie and shepherd's pie, fruit pies like strawberry rhubarb and blueberry. I even went through a phase where I made those no-bake pudding cream pies a lot. They're so easy. It's just a box of pudding, milk, a graham cracker crust, and a tub of whipped cream. So easy.
You know, some people would contend that a pie which is not cooked is actually not considered a pie.
Let's not split hairs here.
Yeah, that's right. No hairs in the pie.
Ugh, seriously?
You're just jealous because I haven't shared my Grandma Ruth's famous pie crust recipe with you yet. Well, you're in luck, because I'm going to break the rule I just made and share a secret family recipe with you.
The rule you just made?
Yeah, that the family recipe is secret and it shouldn't be shared with pretentious members of the Central Wisconsin filling of the Pie Council.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Shall we just get to the recipe portion already? If I could, I would knock your heads together if I just went a little boom.
Fine.
Fine. My mom made us a cookbook with many of our favorite family recipes in it. This one is called Mom's Pie Crust. It refers, of course, to her mom, my Grandma Ruth. It calls for 2 cups of flour, 1 cup of softened butter, and 1/2 cup of liquid. Now, the liquid was the secret ingredient, and Grandma called this her no-fail recipe. You crack an egg into a measuring cup and fill it with water to make 1/2 cup. The process is to mix 1/2 the butter with the flour using a pastry blender until it's real fine. And then you add the rest of the butter and mix it to the size of peas. Add the liquid and mix until just blended. Put it in the refrigerator to cool it while you make the filling. Then you put flour on the counter and use 1/2 the dough to roll out to the size of your pie plate. The recipe will make 1 double crust, 1 double pie crust, or 2 single crust pies. She had a couple of notes on the recipe. Mom said you use 1/2 as much butter as flour and 1/2 as much water as butter. She also said Grandma used lard instead of butter, but Mom liked how it tasted with the butter instead.
I approve of your recipe, mostly, but I can give you some tips on why you may have some trouble turning out a great pie crust with that method.
Do tell, because I can't ask Grandma.
Well, the first thing is your butter needs to be very cold. In fact, if it's a hot day, you may even want to chill it in the freezer for 10 to 15 minutes before you start.
Oh, okay, that's a good note.
Mixing 1/2 the butter in first until it's very fine is okay, but the second step in your recipe is great. It's important to leave larger chunks of fat in your dough to make it flaky. As the dough is baking, the fat creates steam and creates little pockets of air to create the flaky texture you want in a pie crust.
I didn't know that.
Now, the amount of water in your recipe here, I would interject a note of caution. You may not want to use the whole 1/2 cup. Water helps the gluten in the flour develop. You want to avoid this for a tender crust. You only want to add enough water so the dough holds together when you pinch a piece between your fingers. You actually want a very shaggy dough. Some people use vodka instead of water because it bakes off in the oven and reduces the amount of water in the finished crust. Your grandmother's addition of the egg does make the dough more pliable and easy to roll out, but it will make the crust more compact and not as flaky.
Vodka in a pie crust. Who knew about that? Mm-hmm.
The rest of your recipe is pretty spot on. The only other thing I would mention is after you've gently placed your dough in the pan, don't stretch it or pull it. You want to cover and chill the crust and pan in the refrigerator before baking or filling. It keeps the pie keeping its shape and the size. It's shape and size when you bake it.
Wow. You really are a pie expert. I am very sorry I ever doubted you.
All hail the chair of the North American pan of the Midwest crust of the Central Wisconsin filling of the Pie Council. Huzzah!
I hate you both.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's time to wrap this up. Thank you for joining us today. I don't know if we'll ever get Seth back, but join us each Monday for a fun segment that will entertain and educate you on all things kitchen. And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Oh, that was fun. That was amazing.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette. A temporary ceasefire that went into effect 8 hours ago in Gaza is holding